Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jordan with the Laundromat Resource Podcast. This is show 104, and we've got a doozy for you because we're going down under today, down to Australia. And we're going to talk with Jonathan Santa Maria about how he tripled his laundromat business. And it's an awesome, awesome interview, tons of practical tips. And man, you know, no matter where you're at in the world, Jono's got some great things to share. So we're going to get into his story and how he tripled his business here in a second. But real quick, I got a Fastlane tip for you. Fastlane tips are ways that Laundromat Resource can help you Fastlane, help you fast track. Oh no, is it fast track? Dang it. I forget again. I think it's Fastlane. How it can put you in the fast lane towards success. Man, I really got to nail that down at one point. And today's Fastlane tip is Diligent Capital Investments, the only laundromat fund that I know of out there that I am a part of, along with Ross Dodds and Michael Ambrose. We are doing we have an open fund right now. And so if you are an accredited investor and are interested in getting into the laundromat business, participating in the income side of things, but you want it to be passive, if you want to peek over our shoulders as we do it, as we run these laundromats, if you just want to be a part of this fund, check out diligencecapitalinvestments.com. And if you want more information, just shoot me an email, jordan@laundromatresource.com. That website and my email address will be the first links down below. If you're on YouTube in the description, or if you're listening to the podcast, you can check out the show notes at laundromatresource.com/show104. Shoot me an email, put Diligence Capital Investments in the subject line, and I will shoot over the PPM and the subscription agreement if you want to take a look at that. So, credit investors, come jump on this thing and be a part of it. We are looking to do some very cool things in the laundromat industry. So come be a part of that. Okay. I also have a real quick bonus Fastlane tip for you. And this is for anybody out there who either has a pickup and delivery business, who maybe you're struggling to just get it off the ground, or maybe it's just not progressing fast enough, or if you're looking to ramp up a pickup and delivery business. Now, there's a lot of great information on the podcast about you know, pickup and delivery, how to start. I've done webinars on how to start, but there's a very cool opportunity, I think. And, you know, yes, I'm a little biased because he's my buddy, but he also does a bang up job with pickup and delivery. And Dave Laundromat Millionaire Men's is doing, I guess, like a boot camp where he's inviting you to come down to his boot camp. He's going to run, you know, some educational content, but also you're going to go check out his operations, see his employees, see how things work, put your hands on things, have the experience of it, get to interact with him and ask him one-on-one questions. Very, very cool opportunity. And he's only got a couple spots left. So I'm going to put a link again down below on YouTube or, you know, laundromatresource.com/show104, where you can get that link and be a part of his boot camp that he's got for pick 'em delivery. Now, some people are going to have different opinions on this. Here's my opinion, and this is just my unbiased opinion. I will say this about, I've said this about the Williffords, who've done a boot camp for self-serve laundry. I mean, anybody who is killing it in the way that you want to kill it, this is a no-brainer. Okay. If you're looking to ramp up a pickup and delivery business or, you know, put some rocket fuel on your current pickup and delivery business, go learn from the best people who are doing it. And that is, man, that's a great way, not just to shortcut your path to success, fast lane, you know, fast track, I don't know. But also, you know, that is a way to go further than you can go on your own. So go check that out. If you're interested in pickup and delivery, if you're interested in passive laundromat investment, go check out diligencecapitalinvestments.com or shoot me an email, jordan@laundromatresource.com, and we will get you all squared away. Okay, that's a lot of stuff, but I really want to jump into it with Jono. It's an awesome interview. You're going to love it. Get a ton of great information out of it. Get some note-taking devices ready, and let's jump into it with Jono.
Thanks for having me, and congratulations on 100 shows, Jordan. This is awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, we're doing this interview right after show 100 came out, so Big milestone, a lot of fun just to think about doing 100 episodes. But I can tell already this one's going to be the best one out of all of them. So I'm looking forward to that.
I bet. I can't wait.
No pressure. No pressure. Hey, man. So, you know, we connected and you actually shot me a message on LinkedIn. I was like, hey, here's a little bit of my story. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. He's like, you want me to come share it? I was like, come share it. This is going to be great. But before we get into your story, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and maybe where you are? And then I want to kind of figure out how your path led you to laundromats.
Awesome. Well, I'm Jono. I'm from Melbourne, Australia. I own a laundromat called Nina's Laundrette in Northcote. I'm a digital marketer. So my laundry is a hobby. I like to call it a hobby. I work in digital marketing full time, done a lot of travel in my 20s. And I got a really weird path to how I got to owning a laundromat. But really excited to share.
Yeah. So, where are some of the places you traveled to?
I lived in Barcelona for a year or two. I've studied and lived in Mexico. I've done 30 odd states of America. And then some places closer to home. So New Zealand, Malaysia, Bali.
So exotic. Yeah, no big deal. Bali, Malaysia, New Zealand, land of Lord of the Rings. You're in Australia. Is it true that everything's trying to kill you in Australia? Because that's kind of an ongoing quote unquote joke, but I'm not sure if we're really joking or not. Because it really does seem like everything in Australia is trying to kill you. Like plants, animals, really? Everything, sun.
Probably just foreigners. I reckon
probably just Americans mostly.
Like the weather and the flora and fauna don't really mind us being here, but everyone else.
Yeah. That's really funny. It's really funny. Okay, cool. So you did a lot of traveling and stuff. So I'm curious. The digital marketing thing, that seems to go pretty well with, a digital nomad type lifestyle, maybe, or even just, you can pick up that skill going along along on your journeys and stuff. But how did you go from traveling, living all these different places to owning a laundromat? What was that path there?
Most people might know that Melbourne spent a lot of time in lockdown over the pandemic, so longer than most cities. And we actually had two kind of prolonged sets of lockdown. And after the first one, kind of the in-between part, I remember getting home from like a pub and waking up the next morning like super hungover and scrolling through TikTok. And there was this guy who interviews people and goes like, what do you do for a living? And like, they've got really nice cars. And this one guy said, I work in private equity. And I'm like, what the hell is private equity? So I started like Googling it and went down this hole and realized that like people flip businesses as well as houses. And at that point, it just seemed like really clear that there are a lot of business owners who probably own really good, stable businesses with good foundations, but just didn't have the digital skills to be able to transition to what a business owner in Melbourne would need to have to survive for the next kind of 12 months. So I started looking at businesses to buy and seeing if there were any good deals out there. And that arvo, I found a laundromat in Northcote, and 3 weeks later, I'd signed a contract to buy it.
Oh man, that was like fast.
Yeah, well, I know that now. I didn't think it was at the time.
That's hilarious. Did you have any like investing experience beforehand, or business ownership experience, or anything like that beforehand?
One of my goals when I was sort of in my mid-20s, I kind of realized that I needed to start investing. And then I started with shares, which was probably the most accessible. I'm fortunate enough to have family who can support me as well. So me and my mum invested in some real estate, nothing flash, just like a little flat. So the goal was to work towards, by the time I was 40, I want to be able to choose how much of my time I give to other people for money. So I'm not like a FIRE person. Like, I don't want to, retire early and be this like, person in their mid-30s who doesn't work. I don't like, that's not attractive to me, but I do like value time and time with other people. So I wanted to work towards building an investment portfolio that meant that when I'm 40, I could, you know, work 3 days for someone else and then have 2 days when I'm working on my own projects, or, you know, go on prolonged holidays and not have to worry about income. This just seemed like laundromats really fit the bill in terms of that kind of business.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So you bought, you're using a lot of words over there that just don't make any sense, and it's kind of embarrassing for you. So I'm assuming a flat is like a house. Is that
An apartment?
Like an apartment? Like, is it a, is it
like a gym flat? Flat? Like one of those like complexes.
Why do you call it a flat? Is it flat? What's the deal with
that? The roof's flat.
No, the roof's flat.
I don't know.
Yeah, just kidding. And then, you said, shares. I'm assuming is that like stocks? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you just call them stocks? I mean, that's what they're called. So,
share portfolio is what it says on the website.
I probably won't give you a hard time the whole time because you guys are wrong about everything over there, and we're always right about everything. But I had to give you a little bit of a hard time. So, okay. So you bought some real estate. You bought an apartment condo type thing with your mom, which is pretty cool. So what led you to, I'm trying to connect the dots here. You're watching TikTok hungover and you see a guy driving a fancy car and he says, I'm in private equity. So you bought a laundromat and you had a couple things in between there, but like connect those dots for me
The private equity thing was just like, I got introduced to what private equity is and flipping businesses.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose just the environment at the time, there was a lot of struggling businesses. So, I mean, it could have been anything, you know what I mean? It could have been a car wash. It could have been something else, but the laundromats was super appealing because of their like recession proof, you know, it was a mandated business that could be opened. And then, like I said, I really value my time. So I needed something that could operate without me being there and was going to be relatively consistent. So, I think after I bought the laundromat, I looked at other kind of, you know, non-attended businesses, and I kind of built this hierarchy of like, we'll start with a laundromat, and then once I've made enough money from that, maybe I can buy a car wash, like an automated car wash, and then once that one makes enough money, eventually I can buy a car park and retire, because that's anyone who owns car parks, I reckon that's got to be the ultimate unattended goal, doesn't it?
That's right, man. Just a place for people to leave their cars, and you don't really have to do anything. Especially get those. They used to have the like a kiosk where you'd like go pay or something. But now, last time I was at the Clean Show in Atlanta, the laundromat trade show there, and I paid using an app, so I never even had to have a kiosk or anything. So it's, that's the life, man.
In Australia, most of the ones that we use now, they scan your number plate, so you don't even have to get a ticket anymore. You just drive in, and then as you're driving out, it scans your number plate and tells you to tap your card, and then the thing opens.
That's it. Yeah, dude, that's the life. Yeah, all right, I'm down with that plan. The only thing maybe easier to run than a laundromat would be a parking lot or a car park if you're upside down over there. I love that. So was there something in particular that prompted laundromat, or were you just, you were specifically looking for something that, you know, relatively passive, stable business and it just came up?
I can't exactly remember why I chose laundromats, but I remember like this all happened in like the space of 3 hours. So watched a TikTok, started trying to figure out which business I thought would be a good idea. Laundromats seemed to be that business. And then when I Googled like laundromat for sale, a laundromat in Northcote, which is like 10 minutes from where I live, came up for sale. So like within 3 hours, I've kind of like thought this would be a good idea, found a business which I thought might be a good idea. A ferocious dog display. And then found one which potentially could be like a really good business for me because of where it was. But then from finding that one and actually going through the process of due diligence and meeting with the business broker and going through that process. That was probably like 3 weeks. The initial choosing a laundromat, probably more by circumstance than by design. It just sort of happened in like 3 hours.
I'm just dying over. I love your style, man. Like, I'm over looking at TikToks and you're like, huh, I'll just buy a laundromat. And then 3 weeks later, you bought a laundromat like that. I love that. In seriousness, like I've said this before, but I talk to so many people. I do so many consulting calls and, you know, maybe some of you listen to this, you're in this camp right here where, you know, you've been thinking about buying a laundromat, maybe even researching buying a laundromat for months, years, literally even decades. I've had people who've been saying, I've been thinking about buying a laundromat for decades. And, there's this two extremes over here where you're looking for decades and haven't bought one, and you're looking for 3 hours and you buy one within 3 weeks. So probably somewhere in the middle is a good one, but probably closer to your end of taking that action, right? I love that.
Yeah, totally. And to be like really clear, in those 3 weeks, there was like a whole bunch of diligence that happened. So probably not as much as there should be, knowing what I know now. But you know, like I sat in the store like 3 times and just counted, because it was a coin only laundromat when I bought it. Mm-hmm. And I counted like at different days of the week, at different times of the day, like how much money went through the store, so we could get an idea of like what's this bloke making. And then I sat down with a friend of mine who works in finance, and we kind of mapped out looking at his utilities and what we thought his income was, like what do we think he's actually making? What do we think that like the potential could be if we made changes and that sort of stuff? And like, so it was like a whirlwind process, but like I was sort of working, and like after work would go to this guy's house and would be looking at spreadsheets and that sort of stuff. So it wasn't like I just kind of like, I want a laundromat, and went and found the business broker and then just said, yeah, cool, here's some money, like I'll buy it. There was some diligence that went into it.
Well, okay. So, I mean, you know, first of all, I just got to say, you're making this very difficult for me to put together a title for this episode, because there's too many like good catchy, like, you know, here's the guy who bought a laundromat in 3 hours. Like here's, you know, we're going to talk about what happened with that laundromat over the last year that you've owned it. And I mean, that in itself is going to be a catchy title. So, I mean, you're making it difficult, but exciting. I love it. Okay. So, I mean, can we talk about like, what did you do during that 3 weeks for the due diligence? I mean, you were looking at spreadsheets and you sat in a few times and counted money. I mean, was there anything else that went into it, or what were you looking for in the spreadsheets? Can you tell me how you felt confident about buying this one?
Yeah, so I suppose the first part that made me confident was what kind of I know and my internal skills and what I brought. So I'm a digital marketer. I knew that I didn't actually have to Google my business listing, which was the first thing. So the only people who are using this laundromat are people who literally saw it or knew it was there. So anyone who was sort of wider than a 1 kilometer radius wasn't going to be able to find it. I knew that just adding that was going to, you know, increased revenues by, you know, 20% at least, you know, but if people have been able to Google it. It had no web presence. There was no paid marketing going into it. Besides that, the machines were relatively new. Like they're all Dexter washers and dryers, except for a couple of like 40-year-old top loaders. The machines were relatively new. The store was pretty clean. Like it was... And the people were using it, like it had goodwill. So there was only kind of up from there. One of the biggest mistakes I made though was when we got all excited about, we've done the numbers and this is where we think we can get it to. And with relative ease, I just signed the sales contract. I didn't like engage with a lawyer or anything like that. And I kind of engaged with the lawyer after the fact, like, what do you mean you've signed the sales contract? There were a couple of things in that, that to their credit, like I've got a really good legal team, who was looking after me for this process. And
doesn't do you any good if you don't use them.
yeah. Yeah. Um, Yeah, so like they helped me, and my accountant as well helped me just sort of ask some questions of the vendor after the fact and asked if we could make some changes to the contract that would sort of benefit me and not leave any sort of benefit or take away any benefit for the vendor. And that were really important. So I suppose like one tip I would definitely give people is make sure you've got a conveyancer or a lawyer engaged before you start, before you sign anything really. Because that could have been, like it could have left money on the table basically without that. Besides that, we're looking at spreadsheets. We're like thinking of ideas of how we can improve the business without actually knowing what was going on. And the other thing was just checking the real estate ownership as well. So one of the risks was that we had a really short lease. I think there was only 4 weeks, sorry, 4 years left.
I was like, 4 weeks? Holy cow.
And the broker was saying things like, oh, you know, no, like once there's only one term left, the landlord will order, you know, give you a term, but you can't like sign or commit to buying a business on, you know, the goodwill of other people. So, so we put a condition of sale in the contract that if we bought it, we automatically got an extra term. So even though the business was selling on, buying a 4-year lease and all the equipment in the store, what we actually bought was a 7-year lease with all the equipment in the store. So that was another thing that we kind of added in the diligence that probably other people wouldn't have looked at. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge one right there too, right? Because that lease is, like you said, the landlord may be the most trustworthy person in the world, and you know, but circumstances change. And if it's not written down in any kind of contract or anything, you just can't bet your business on the fact that somebody's gonna give you another term or give you an option to renew or give you a new lease, because you know, if they don't for whatever reason, good or bad, you're out of luck. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
The reality is like Northgate has a lot of development going at the moment, and like the store's in a prime area for development. So I would imagine that at the end of the lease, they probably were going to knock the building down and put apartments there. So it was really important to secure that, because when you buy a laundromat, I don't think a lot of people who realize this, but when you buy a laundromat or most businesses, what you're actually buying is the lease and whatever's in the store. So that's what I bought. You know, I bought a 7-year lease and a bunch of laundromat equipment.
Yeah. And that's it's true of all businesses. That's especially true of a laundromat because you have all that infrastructure in there, right? To make the machines run. And so, you know, if it's a clothing store or a shoe store or whatever, yeah, lease is important, but if you don't get the lease renewed, you can pack up and move down the street and reopen up. For a laundromat, you can't really do that. You can, it's just expensive and difficult, time consuming to do that. And a lot of times impractical to do that. So it is important. And that is what you're buying, the lease and the stuff in the store. It's a good way to put it. Okay. So you finally involved your crack lawyer, your awesome lawyer team. Yeah. I don't know. I was saying things that were opposite of what I was trying to say. But you had your all-star lawyer team involved finally, and they did allow you. So it sounds like the seller was, you know, a good person, was, you know, working with you a little bit to try to get this thing sold to you. Is that true?
Yeah, okay. Definitely. It was really helpful. He's another little old man, you know, from Romania. I'd owned the store for, I think 10 years, and then someone owned it before him. He was like really happy to sort of accommodate any changes that we wanted to make. Like I said, they weren't going to take anything away from him, but they were really going to help me out. So he was good. We had a couple of stumbles with the landlord, but we got over those pretty quick, and we've got a good relationship now.
Yeah, that's good. Cause that's another thing that you're buying into, right? When you're, especially with a laundromat, like you're getting this long-term lease and it's kind of a marriage to the business in a way, but it's also kind of a marriage to the landlord if you're leasing that space. And so, you know, for me, having a good or at least a working relationship with a landlord is a must. I mean, you got to have that. And if you don't, it's a deal breaker to me, because I don't want to be stuck in a long-term relationship with a landlord that's just going to be a huge pain to work with. So that's good.
Totally.
Okay. So you kind of went through that due diligence. I mean, how did you decide, okay, this is the one for me? Was it the numbers? Was it you saw this potential? What was it that was like, okay, I'm going to pull the trigger on this one?
Yeah, it was the numbers. I think we ran the numbers off if we were buying it with a 4-year lease. So everything we did off the worst case scenario before we signed the contract to put the deposit down. And the numbers off a 4-year, operating the business for 4 years looked pretty positive. So that's why we pulled the trigger, because once we added the extra term, assuming we got it, then it looked really good. So that's why we ended up pulling the trigger.
Nice. Okay. So real quick, and correct me if I'm wrong, I have some experience with laundromat owners in Australia, but pretty limited. But pretty much everyone I think I know that owns a laundromat in Australia has laundromats are like relatively small compared to a lot of laundromats here in the US. Is that the case in Melbourne or where you're at?
Yeah, I can imagine the ones I've seen on the other laundromat owners on TikTok and YouTube and stuff. I've got 12 washers, one 18 kilo, which I'm not sure how many pounds that is. That's a T600 Dexter.
Okay. Yeah. That's a 30 pounder, I think.
It's a fairly big one.
Yeah.
One of those, I got three T400s and two T300s. And then I've got two 9 kilo Speed Queens and three 50-year-old Speed Queen top loaders. Like they're cream, they're real, real old. And then I've got 10 or five Dexter stackers, T30s, and one T50.
Yeah. Okay.
So like
yeah.
12 pockets of dryers and 12 pockets of washers.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So you did this due diligence and you're like, okay, I'm in, I'm doing it. And you pulled the trigger. When you took over, did things work out the way you thought they were going to? I mean, were the numbers spot on or what was that like?
So when I took over, the numbers were like actually extremely honest from the vendor. What we kind of found out in the first couple of months is, what he kind of said he was going to make is kind of what he was making. I suppose like the caveat there is that Melbourne went back into lockdown, I think a month after I took over, which I don't think it really it did affect sales like in hindsight now that I know what we're like how we're currently doing. But I think the bigger impact is that in Australia versus America, or anecdotally anyway, probably 30% of my business comes from other businesses. So, like surrounding a tattoo parlor next door, a cafe across the road, and down the street, there's a Thai massage place that come and do their towels. Mm-hmm. So there's probably about like 20 to 30% of our business. Then maybe another 60% is people who come and do their laundry, like, families and singles who come and do their weekly laundry. And then like the last 10% are people whose washing machine's broken or they're doing like a one-off, washing doonas or something like that. And I'm not sure like if that's a similar thing in the States, but where we lost a lot of revenue in that time was probably the businesses who were shut, who would usually use us kind of every week or a couple of times a week. We're on par with what he was saying, which is probably about like 50% less than what we thought we were going to be making.
Yeah. Once the second lockdown came through, is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that started about a month after we.
Yeah. How long was that second lockdown?
From September to like early December, I think.
Oof.
Maybe October. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Long time ago.
Still, yeah. But I mean, that's a long time. And, you know, obviously we all know this, like that whole pandemic thing was tough on business owners, small business owners, especially. It was tough on small business owners. But, I mean, did you stay open? Did you have to close down also?
No, we were open the whole time. And the government was doing a lot of stuff, to support businesses. Like, I think they were supplementing wages, the whole time we were locked down, and things like that. So it sucked for, you know, for other business owners, but for us, like, it was, I mean, I'd just taken over, so I didn't know any better.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, you went straight to the deep end, you know, passed through the fire a month after. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, did that affect your business at all? I mean, going forward, right? So you take over this business and a month later, everything shuts down. First of all, was that on your radar at all that things might shut down again?
Yeah. So we had budgeted for that. So Okay. Basically the first year's budget, we just looked at his numbers, and even though we thought it was going to do better, I was operating as if I was going to match him. Like, I was working towards a number where I'm like, well, I'm not probably going to improve too much on this guy, so I'll just budget to what he's saying he's going to make, and we'll work towards that number, which was probably was good because it created an expectation of like, well, this is where I think I'm going to be based on what's actually happening. And then the reality was that we were like head and shoulders above that by the end of the financial year, because we started making changes, and those changes had compounding benefits over time that are still kind of coming through today.
Yeah. So, okay. So you've owned it for a little over a year now?
Year and a couple months.
I mean, talk to us about how has the business done over the last year or so?
Yeah. Well, I'll talk about the actual number. I think we did about $5,000-$6,000 in July last year of income, and this past July we had $15,500.
Whoa, you 3x'd your income?
Yeah. Almost.
In a year.
Yeah. For that. Oh. Yeah.
Holy cow. In 1 year. Okay. All right. Listen, my ears are perked up here. I'm ready to listen. I think we all want to know. Like, okay, so how did you 3x the income?
Hold on.
Before you answer that question, because I do want to have the answer, obviously, to that one. But was that $5,000-$6,000? Was that on par with, you know, what the guy was doing beforehand that you took over? Was that lower?
Yeah. I mean, he said that he was making, I don't know, like $50,000 a year or something like that from the store. Which kind of worked, like, at Marsh kind of works out to what we thought he was going to make, or what he made.
Yeah. Okay. One other question. Is that Australian dollars or is that real dollars?
That's dollary dues.
Dollary dues. Okay. All right. Well, okay. So 5,000 to 15,000 a month in a year ish.
Yeah.
How did you do this?
Yeah. So the first thing was that the place was coin only. So, in Australia, that just doesn't fly. I know, like, on this store, on the show, you've spoken to heaps of people who have a mixture of coin or like loyalty card. That just doesn't fly here. Like, people pay for everything with PayWave, so Apple Pay, Google Pay, or just like tap their card. So the first thing I did, like, literally, I think I actually bought the system during the due diligence process. So I was that keen on getting it in. Was organize a kiosk system. So we don't have like tap and go on our individual machines. We have a kiosk that people can go and start the machine from the kiosk and pay there. So that was the first thing we invested in, and that was a fairly significant outlay. But it's the 70% of our revenue comes from people paying by card.
Wow.
So that was probably the first thing. The second thing, and I suppose what really made this opportunity attractive, was there was no digital presence at all for this store. So There was no Google My Business account. There was no website. There was no paid advertising of any sort of description. So the only people who were using it knew it was there because they walked past it or they drove past it, or their parents had used it or something like that. There wasn't anyone sort of discovering it. We took over in June, and then we didn't actually have a website until September because we had to develop a brand. So we developed the brand Meters because the store was actually, when I bought it, that's what it was registered as. And my cousin, who's an illustrator and designer, sort of sat down with me, and we were talking about concepts for a brand. And the store itself, it looks like it's from the 70s. Like, it's a very, weird tiles set up, and it comes from a part of Melbourne that was built in the 70s and kind of has that vibe. So we looked at a coffee table book that had photos of elderly store owners in front of their stores from sort of local neighborhoods around where we lived, and took inspiration from that. And then the brand itself is very 70s. So look, when you go in the store, it looks kind of retro. It's got, powder blues and like a fluoro orange, and the fonts that we chose were that kind of 70s. But that, if we had have got that a bit earlier, I probably would have had a website a bit earlier, but we had to wait till we had that brand.
Yeah. I'm putting you on the spot right here, and it's totally fine if not, but before this thing goes live, can you send me a couple pictures and we'll put it up so people can see kind of that 70s vibe?
Yeah, totally.
That'd be awesome. So you check out the show notes and you can go see see some pictures of the laundromat. That's awesome. Okay. So you branded it, you did some digital, you got on Google My Business or Google Business Profile now. You did a website. Did you build it? Did you have it built? How'd you do that?
I did it myself. So just sort of, WordPress, bought a laundromat theme, added the colors and fonts in.
And they got a theme for everything. Laundromat theme. I like that. That's awesome. Okay. So you did that. And then you mentioned paid advertising. I mean, did you do some paid advertising too?
Yeah, we did. I did Google search ads. Again, it's part of what I do for work. So it just kind of made sense. So we did that probably about 2 weeks after we launched the website. Once the website was all up and running and I had all the pages that I needed, probably about 2 weeks after. And we weren't doing much. It was probably like $10 a day. Not a lot, but just enough that, if someone searched Laundromat Northgate, that we were the first thing that came up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That's a good, it's kind of like, I don't know, just like an injection of like go when, it's never even been online at all.
Yeah.
Didn't even, if it doesn't exist online, it just doesn't exist basically. Right. So, getting that Google profile up, getting a website up, and then kind of doing an injection of Google ads. That's a big shot to the arm. So yeah. I mean, how long did it take to start seeing some results from doing those things?
I think that we've had our biggest jumps from sort of April, May. So we started doing this digital work we had a website and a big Google Business Profile in September. So we bought in July, put in the PayPass and some like Nina's branding by September. And then April, May is where we saw like really big incremental jumps. And that's probably because we came into winter. So autumn, winter, people start using the dryers a lot more. But also I suppose we've probably set behaviours before that. So if people have found us over summer because they randomly needed to wash their doona and then all of a sudden they need to come in more often in winter, that behaviour was set up beforehand. It wasn't just like, a switch flicked and people decided they're going to use us. The fruition and the cut through from the digital marketing happened in April. Like it just sort of built and compounded up over time.
Yeah. And that's key too, because I see a lot of people will throw a little bit of money at some ads for a month or two, and they'll throw up their hands and say, I didn't really get any new business, or I'm not even sure if I got new business or not. 'Cause it can be hard to tell if you know, hard to track that stuff. So then they just kind of give up and never see any fruit because it can take a little while and it takes a little bit to compound up there.
Yeah, especially if you self-service. So like it's mm-hmm. really difficult as like a self-service retail store to see tangible benefit from paid advertising. Because even if someone walks in and how'd you find us, which I do like every single person that I see in the laundromat, like how'd you find us, tell me. and they're always going to say Google, but you're never really going to know, was it your paid ad or was it just you jumped in the map pack and you know you had the most reviews, so they came to you.
Yeah. Are you actively like trying to get reviews?
Yeah. So one of the things that we just said, we're a self-service laundromat, but we have a boutique pickup and delivery service. So we do towels for like osteos and skincare clinics and stuff like that. And the way that started was that a friend of mine, like I went to a house party, like, you know, a couple of months after I bought a laundromat and was sort of telling everyone I bought a laundromat. And a couple of months later, a friend of mine who was an osteo rang me and said, hey, do you still own that laundromat? My towel guy has gone out of business. So I was like, maybe we'll have a, like, I could do that. We don't do it currently, but I did some sort of napkin maths and her store was down the road from mine. So I figured if I have to go to clean the laundromat twice a week, like that's my time. So if I had a 10-minute drive to go pick up this person's towels and wash them while I'm cleaning, I can kind of get paid to clean. So that's kind of how it started. And from there, we've built up a small group of clients that that we use that it sort of buffers that cleaning aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, and that's awesome. I mean, supplementing your kind of the labor costs and even just the time cost of doing that, being able to just throw stuff in while you're working is awesome. It's that whole multitasking thing that brings in that extra revenue and
yeah,
helps you triple your revenue. I'm like still blown away by that. That's insane. So you got the digital presence going, you added the card system, you went out getting some reviews and started this boutique.
I just realized like we skipped over a whole part. So you said you actively like get reviews. The reason I sort of brought up the pickup and delivery part was that when I started pickup and delivery and spending more time in the store to clean, so it's probably about 2 hours a week, and with this pickup and delivery part, it meant that I had more face-to-face time with customers. And that's when I started, you know, everyone I spoke to who had a good experience, you know, just kind of mentioned that it really helps that if you leave a review and like if you're having a good time, we want, you know, other people to have that experience as well. So that really helped. I mean, we've got 57 reviews, which is probably more than double anyone around us. And you know, they're all 5-star except for one or two. Like,
tell me who they are. I will hunt them down. Yeah. No, that's huge. Okay. So, I mean, you're like multitasking to the, you know, there's layers of this multitasking because you're interacting with customers, you're getting those reviews, you're cleaning, you're washing towels, all that's getting done on this, you know, it's very efficient that, you know, way of doing things. I really like that a lot. And, you know, for anybody else out there who's running their laundromat, I mean, similar kinds of things you can do. And even if you're not the one cleaning, like be training your staff, your attendants, you know, when they're interacting with customers, which they should be doing, you know, and asking them, hey, you know, if this is a good experience for you, you know, if you're happy with the service here and the facilities and all that stuff, hey, leave us a review on Google. It really helps us out a lot. And you can even incentivize your staff, you know, if you want to solicit those reviews and, you know, just remind people, give them a little nudge. Hey, give us a review over here because it helps us out a lot.
I mean, there were definitely times early on where like I was putting more of an emphasis on how many reviews can we get this month versus what the income was, because that was just more important.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and you know, what's interesting about that is because, you know, we don't talk a whole lot about SEO, search engine optimization here, how you show up, you know, on Google and how you get to the top. And, you know, same with like the maps apps, you know, Google Maps, Apple Maps, those kinds of things. Like, how do you show up, you know, when people type in laundromat? But one of the factors of that, well, number one, have a Google business profile. Number two, make sure it's completely filled out. And try to keep it updated too, right? Like, get some fresh pictures and some fresh posts up there. You know, even if it's just once or twice a week, that's better than nothing. And then number three, I mean, one of the factors is how many reviews you have and what people are having to say about your business and about you. So, you know, those reviews can be, they equate to revenue down the line. It's like one of those things where you plant seeds and it sprouts fruit down the line for you.
Yeah, I've 100% spoken to multiple people who've driven past laundromats to get to mine because they read the reviews.
Yeah, and I mean, think about your, like, not you per se, but anybody listening, like, think about your own experience where you're, you know, you want to go to a restaurant or you want to go to you don't want to go to a dentist who's got no reviews or bad reviews, right? Because, you know, it's your teeth and you don't like going to the dentist anyways, right? Well, nobody likes doing laundry either. And nobody wants to go do laundry and have a bad experience. So if there's, you know, if there's three places that have, you know, four reviews near your place and you got to drive to them anyways, and just a little further, there's one that's got 55, you know, 5-star reviews, you might just drive a little bit further to go to that one that, you know, it's a proven commodity. People like going there. So yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, do you have any, I mean, as a digital marketer and understanding this business, I mean, it's just kind of a unique little business. Do you have any tips for us, as laundromat owners for the digital marketing side of things?
Well, I suppose for most people, the best tip is to have a website and to have a Google profile. That's where the cornerstone of it, where you need to start. I suppose from there, there's definitely things you can do in terms of optimizing your website so that you are closer to the top of the Google search, or at least appearing in the Google Map Pack. And the Google Map Pack is, you know, the three businesses that they show on Google Maps when people are searching for you. Those are the core things that I suppose you need to have in place. And then from there, the benefit of Google Ads is that if you're not at the top, you can pay for Google Ads and be at the top. Mm-hmm. So that's probably something else that people, you know, should consider. I think Google search, this show talks a lot about social media, and I'm biased in that Google is a better form of marketing because it's further down the funnel. So if you're paying for TikTok or Facebook ads, what you're trying to do is make people aware of you, and you're very much at the top of the funnel. When you're paying for Google search ads, people are Googling your service. They need your service. So if someone's, you know, typed out, you know, laundromat Hollywood, they're looking for a laundromat in Hollywood. They're not, like, you know, looking for someone to find it or put it in front of them. They're not just searching through a news feed and looking at what their mate's doing, and then all of a sudden your laundromat's popping up. Yeah, there's intent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say one caveat to that, I mean, I agree with that completely. One caveat to that, I would say, is if you're running like a service side of things, like a wash, dry, fold, or pickup and delivery, especially, I still think, at least around here, a lot of people don't even know that service exists, especially the pickup and delivery side of things. And that's where, and like you're saying, that's more top of the funnel, where you're just creating an awareness, like, hey, you know, this is a thing. We can just come pick up your laundry for you and do it. You don't have to think about it. And then we drop it off, you know, all clean and folded, right? Top of the funnel thing. That's not people who are looking to make a purchasing decision. Whereas Google, they're looking to make a purchasing decision, but if they don't know that it exists, they're also not going to be searching it on Google, trying to find that. So, but you can also get, you know, people who are looking for laundromats who might actually just rather do pickup and delivery. So you can do Google Ads there too. Anything to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've got different campaigns. So we did, or we do have a campaign for our boutique laundry service. And that runs separately to our self-service campaign as well. And it has definitely has worked. So I'll probably have to turn it off because we've got too much or more than we can handle at the moment. But it was really successful. I think like the first, like if we give you like an example, the first 3 days of running the pickup and delivery ads, we had an inquiry that was quoted for 150 kilos a week. So like 150 kilos a week at $4.50 a kilo, I think it worked out to like 20 grand revenue a year for an ad that I paid $3 for.
That's a good ROI right there. That's a good ROI.
Like we didn't get the job, we didn't get the work, but like that was the first quote, like first inquiry that came in.
Yeah.
So like, I suppose, you know, I think I spent about 7,000 or we're budgeted to spend about $7,000, about $17 a day on Google Ads at the moment. And that's going to bring us in, you know, 3-4 times that amount, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. Well, I mean, there you are, man. There's the expert. That's what you do. You're professional and you got it down. That's money right there. Okay. So, thanks for sharing. I mean, seriously, like kudos to you, props to you for tripling your business in about a year. And thanks for sharing like some of the steps that you took, to get there because man, I think all of us would like even just incremental growth, but you know, 3x growth, that's awesome. That's really awesome. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
Oh yeah. So what's on tap for you? Are you looking to continue to try to, I mean, it sounds like you got to ramp down your boutique service there a little bit. Cause it's, you know, too much going on. Are you going to try to buy another location? Or are you just kind of coasting on this one? What's the plan?
I'm actually like, you know, talking to different people to figure out what the best kind of next move is. I think the logical next step is to get a second location. I think I'd like to have one like close-ish to the one I've got currently, so I can have that kind of cross pollinization of the two locations and the brand equity and things like that. So I think that probably in the next 12 to 18 months, look to open up a second store or take over an existing one and rebrand it Nina's. Yeah, I think that's probably the go. I don't think that I really want to build up the pickup and delivery too much because even that, I suppose when we started that, like I said, I started it just so that it could supplement the cleaning money. And I was really clear with myself. I think this is something that business owners should be really clear with at the start. Like they talk about like identity and knowing what you do. It's really important to know what you're not. So those ads that we threw out, for example, the pickup and delivery ads, we had a couple of people who asked us if we could service their Airbnb or people who were asking us to do like their actual laundry. And it was really easy for me to say no, even though there was like opportunities for more revenue because it wasn't what we were doing. Like I was very clear that I'm going to wash towels and I'm only going to do towels. And I need to have very specific like access. So I need to be able to sort of pick up the towels when it's on a schedule that suits me because you know, this laundromat's a hobby. It's not my job. So I can't be, you know, doing over and above for a hobby. I need to be fitting it in with the time that I've allocated.
Yeah. Well, and that's a huge point. I mean, it's a huge distinction too, right? Of you don't, well, at least at this point, you don't have aspirations to leave your job and be a full-time laundromat business owner. Yeah. I mean, you opened this thing up with, hey, this is my hobby. This is what I do on the side. And it's a step helping you achieve your goal, right? Of being able to decide who you're going to sell your time to, if anybody, by the time you're 40, right?
That's right. I mean, even Like, so we, this afternoon, for example, we're trialing a client where we supply the linen. So we're supplying towels to that person. Up until this point, it was a very staunch, like, I've again knocked back people, really like lucrative contracts with people, because they wanted me to supply the linen and I didn't want to own the linen. I didn't want to have to like draft up a contract so that we'd have to lock them in to provide a service for a certain amount of time to justify me going out and buying a bunch of towels. So we had this, you know, very specific rule where people would fill out an inquiry form and we'd take the call for the inquiry. We'd ask, you know, do you have your own linen? If they said no, we'd say, look, you know, thanks for your inquiry, but unfortunately we can't, you know, service you because we don't supply linen. This is the first time we're trialing it. I mean, part of it's because we don't have a place to store, you know, the people's linen and it wouldn't make sense for us. But if we were going to build up the pickup and delivery, that's probably, we'd need a bigger space and then we just don't have that now. So that's probably why it's the second, opening up a second store rather than a scaling up the pickup and delivery.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, it just, it, for me, it reinforces like, hey, this is the importance of understanding why you're doing what you're doing. Some people, their goal is to build a huge, you know, laundromat business, right? The Williford brothers, they have 30 plus, you know, and you know, Ross Dodds, he's got 10 plus and growing, you know, and that's their goal, right? They want to be laundromat owners or laundry business owners, and that's what they're doing. Some people want to do stuff on the side. They want it to be their hobby, or they have some goal that they're trying to accomplish, and their laundromat is the or a vehicle that they're using to help them accomplish that goal, right? So like you were saying, it's important to know what it is that you're trying to accomplish with your business and to filter things, not only through what you're trying to accomplish, what your goal is, but also what it's not, right? And who you're not, filtering it through those things. And it does help make that decision process easier. You know, I think a lot of people will be shocked to hear that you turn customers away, you know, because so many people are just like, you know, I want all the customers.
And there'd be a lot of people out there who like, they bought a laundromat and they did their diligence and it's just not working out the way that they wanted it to. And then like, you've only really got two levers to pull. You can either increase revenue or you can decrease expenses. And you might be looking at, oh, well, if we need to increase revenue by a significant amount, maybe we need to start a pickup and delivery service. But if that was never in your original plan, and that's the lever that you've got to pull, like it's probably going to change your lifestyle. And that's something you've got to put into perspective. Like if you're just going to start a pickup and delivery service, just so you can make the revenue that you thought you were going to, but you never intended to in the first place, and it's going to take up way more of your time than you ever wanted to invest, then it's probably not a good idea.
Yep. And you know, frankly, just from my perspective, like I've been in that desperate spot where I'm like, what am I going to do here? Like what's the, you know, I only have the two levers and I need to increase income. Like, what do I do? Right. And so I started thinking about all kinds of crazy things, not crazy as in they won't work, but crazy as in deviating from the original plan a lot. Right. I've thought about putting in a coffee shop. I think I'm still in like a Facebook group for coffee shop owners. And I don't know, I don't even drink coffee, so I don't know anything about coffee, but I was like, oh, that's what I got to do. I'm like, I guess I'll do it. All right. Pickup and delivery is an option. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that I went through, cause I've been in that spot where I was losing money and I looked at the levers and there weren't really any expenses I could decrease anymore. And so my only lever to pull was, how do I get more money in here? Right. And
yeah, I mean, I'm looking at those levers sort of all the time. Because we've spoken about the kind of incremental gains. You know, a big inspiration for me is the British cycling team from, I think, Tokyo, or maybe the London Olympics. But they weren't winning races for a long time, and they figured out they're about, you know, 10% off the pace, and 10% off the pace at an elite sport level you know, is such a long distance. So what they start looking at is what are the incremental gains that we can make to get us that 10%. You know, so they started bringing their mattresses to race meets and sleeping on their own mattresses rather than a hotel. You know, they methodically looked after their equipment and, you know, like weighed their bikes and tire pressure before they raced, all these like little things that other people wouldn't be doing to get that 10%. And I suppose I try and do that with my business. So a really good example was what I looked at all the expenses. You know, I inherited those expenses. These weren't things that I would have sort of set up. So we looked at the utilities price, and the first thing we do is go out to a energy broker to get us a better deal on gas and electricity. And then the electricity was still too high for my liking. So we looked at ways that I could reduce that. And there was a scheme from the government to replace fluorescent lights with LEDs for free. So, you know, that the wattage is like a third of what a fluorescent light is. So that saves about $30 a month forever. And then we also had like a solar rebate scheme. So we looked at different, you know, solar providers and ended up getting one that was, you know, a half the price of what the other people were charging, and then got solar installed for, you know, in $4,000 instead of $10,000. And again, that's going to have compounding effects because, you know, either my electricity bill will stay as it is for like basically foreseeable future and won't rise with inflation because I've got solar supplementing it, or it could even go down. So like those like little, you know, 1%, 2% changes, compounded with the, you know, the store being a better customer experience and more accessible in terms of being able to pay by card and, you know, painting it to make it look better, adding music, to give it a better vibe, and then just sort of getting those Google reviews, all those things compounded. And like I said, when it got to April, when people use the laundromat more, we saw like huge, you know, $2,000 a month, you know, revenue increases.
Yeah. And those incremental gains, I think I want to say it's Atomic Habits. I was reading about the cycling team and their small little things that they would do to just get like fractions of a percent better. And then, you know, it just all compounded, just like you were talking about, just all compounded at some point where they've just done all these little tiny things. And then it all added up to huge, huge changes, huge gains for them. And I love putting in a perspective of, you know, the laundromat and doing the small things that, yes, they require some effort, right? Require some effort to go find the, you know, the government, you know, supplement or the government scheme, I think you called it, of, yeah, you know, replacing the LED or the fluorescent lights with the LEDs. And yes, it feels like, man, it's only $30 a month. Is that even worth it? But it's that compounding, right? That's one thing that $30 compounds every single month going forward, right? And then you do a few of those things and you just kind of keep looking for ways to tweak both of those levers, right? Like you're saying, the expenses and just decreasing them whenever you can, and the income, you know, whether that's through providing a slightly better customer experience, you know, and interacting with the customers, asking them what they think and making changes based on what they think and asking them for the reviews, which is not a big deal, but eventually you got 50 of them and you're twice your next competitor and people are driving past other laundromats to get to you. Like, it all compounds. It's all these little things that compounds. I love putting in that perspective. I'm so glad you brought that up. Killer.
Yeah. I suppose the one thing, I suppose the British cycling team will have a gold medal forever. But in terms of business, like those compounding gains, they also stay with your business. Like if I left tomorrow, that Google presence will still be there, you know, or if I sold it tomorrow, that Google presence will still be there. Those, you know, energy savings will still be there for the next person. So it just makes a business stronger overall for like a long time, not just, you know, at a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, I mean, that's a better experience for the customers, right? You know, not only do they have better lighting, better customer service, better machines, whatever, you know, slightly cleaner, all that stuff, right? It's better for the customers. It's better for you and your business and your bottom line right now, but it also adds a ton of value for when you do go to sell that business. It's going to be worth a whole lot more than when you bought it, you know, because of the gains that you've tripled the business. So obviously it's going to be worth a lot more, but also because of all the residual of that, right? And the, you know, when you're selling or when you're buying, right, you're buying the lease and the stuff inside the store, and you're buying the goodwill, the reputation of it. Now, there, you know, may or may not be a good reputation when you buy a laundromat, but you can build one, right? And you can do that through online and offline ways to build that reputation. And that goes with the sale of the business. And that has monetary value when you go to sell.
Yeah, so. And that can happen really quick. Like, you know, for me, it happened, you know, within less than 12 months.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Dude, so I'm just like jazzed up. I mean, as soon as you said three times, I was just like jazzed up, right? And so I'm ready to go. But okay, so we have a few segments here I just want to go through with you and chat about. The first one is down to business. And down to business, I mean, we've gone through some of the stuff already, but I just want to go through a few of the other details about your business. So again, you're in Melbourne. Well, you're just outside of Melbourne, right?
Oh, no, inner suburbs of Melbourne, so Northcote, okay. Which is probably like 6Ks from the city.
Okay. I have no idea how far that is, but, you know. I'm assuming it's not that far if it's only 10 minutes. So, okay. So you're in Melbourne, and then you only own one right now, right? And one flat on the real estate side?
Two flats.
Oh, all right. Big dog. You're ready to go. That's awesome. And you've been in the business like a year and a few months, right? You said March of 2021.
March 2021 is when I bought it. June 28th is the official date I took over, 2021.
Okay, so June 28th. All right. Yeah, man, just over a year. That's crazy. Okay, so let's talk about how much does it cost to do laundry in Melbourne?
Yeah, so these are in dollary dues again. Our top loaders are $4, but I want to get rid of them just because like they're like push coin slot and I can't add them to the pay pass machine, so they'll go soon. The 9 kilo machines are $6, the 13 kilo machines are $8, and the 18 kilo machines are $10. And then on the dryer side, it's $1 for 7 minutes on the T30s or the smaller dryers. And $1 for 6 minutes on the bigger dryers.
Yeah, that's awesome. Man, I don't know what any of that means. But actually, you know what's interesting? I actually have, so episode 3 of the Laundromat Resource Podcast a long time ago, when this comes out, it'll be over 100 episodes ago. Toby Donkbar was on the podcast. Shout out, Toby, what's up? And I actually have his VIN prices up right now. So he had 9.5 kilogram machine, or is that right? Kilo machines at $750. You got your nines at $6.
Yeah.
Jack them up. Yeah. He is in Sydney. Yeah. Yeah. 14s at 12. You have 13s at 8 and 15s at, or wow. 9 and 10.
Yeah, the 13s are at 8 and the 18 kilos at 10. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's got his he's got 18s at 15. And he's doing he does dryers. Wow. Well, this is a while ago now, but $750 for 36 minutes of dry.
So 36 minutes. A small dryer would cost you $5 on the smaller machines and $6 on the bigger machines.
Yeah. Just interesting to, you know, see. And like, it's crazy because, you know, I don't really know the context between Sydney and Melbourne, but I'll see like, you know, I'm here in LA and then somebody in the Midwest is like way higher prices than here in LA. And I'm like, wow, this is just crazy. So it's just kind of interesting to see how the different pricing is between the places. Okay, so you have an unattended, thank you for sharing that, by the way. You have an unattended laundromat. You don't have attendants there at all?
Only when I'm there for folding towels. When my dad, when he's helping me out folding towels. Yeah.
Awesome. Which he's there right now, right? Or he was when we started.
Exactly.
That's right. Put him to work. That's awesome though. And then, so you mentioned you put in the kiosk, right? So you have the card/ app pay, right?
Yeah.
And then you also accept coins, right?
Yeah.
But you said pretty quickly people adjusted to the card, the kiosk pay, and 70% is in the kiosk. Is that?
Yeah, I think probably 6 months in, it was about 50-50. And now it's close to like 70-30. To be fair, like I would not have coins
at all.
if it was up to me.
Yeah.
It just kind of adds an extra, you know, needing to go to the bank. And to be honest, it also sort of poses an extra risk. Like we had someone try to like take the whole coin thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not even coin like that much in there. Like they did more damage than they would have stolen out of the coin dispenser. So that happened. It was annoying. That's probably why I don't want coins in the store anymore. But there are customers who only use coins. So you have to, you know, cater to them, make it accessible.
Yeah, some people would say you don't have to. But yes, I get you. Okay, awesome. I would get rid of coins too if I could. So I'm with you. How many hours are you working on this business?
Probably about 10 hours a week, I think, on average, like sometimes less. Sometimes I can get away with six. I'd say, like, if I'm being honest, probably about 10.
And you're doing sort of that boutique side of things when you're there and you're cleaning and stuff too?
Yeah, so I'm there like Mondays and Thursdays for 2 hours cleaning and washing towels. And then on Saturdays I do a run for all of our pickup and delivery customers. So it takes about 3 hours to go and drop off their clean laundry and pick up their new stuff that needs to get washed.
Do you think you'll ever like think about hiring somebody to do that stuff or no?
If we had bigger volumes, maybe. Like wages are a lot higher.
In Australia. Well, if you'd stop sending business away, maybe you could have higher volume.
But there's also, I think, this has just been like small business owner hobby. Again, it's a hobby.
Yeah.
If I employed someone, I want to make sure that one, I was looking after them so that they had the right amount of training and support to be able to, you know, be in store and field customer questions and all that sort of stuff. So that's part of it. But too, I just want like the service that we're providing currently, I want to make sure that's reliable. So at the volume we're at now, it just makes sense to do it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just to be clear, you know, to you, but for everybody, like there's so many ways to run this business. And, you know, I've heard people who are like, man, you shouldn't be doing any of this stuff yourself and blah, 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 blah. But the beauty of this business is you can run it how you want. And again, if you're filtering it through, you know, what are my goals? Who am I? Who are we as a business? And who am I not as a business? And if you're filtering it through those things, man, run your business the way that you want to run it, you know, and there's nothing wrong with doing any of the work yourself, right? Like, and it doesn't matter how long you've been in the business or not, man, you know, your business is your business and run it the way that it works for you. So, I just want to say that because I see online comments sometimes of people who are, you know, who advocate for building the business as a business, and that's not what everybody's trying to do. Right. And so I just wanted to add that in there just to give, not that anybody needs permission, but just to give my okay that you can run your business how you want to.
Yeah. Like, there's no recipe for like being a successful business owner. Especially one that like having a lot, like a really good, work-life balance as well. Like,
yeah, absolutely. As a small business owner, that is notorious, right? It's real easy to get sucked into. You hire somebody, your volume goes up, it keeps going up. So you got to hire somebody else. And then you're running a business and it's supposed to be this hobby. And, you know, So, absolutely. There's no recipe for success. There's lots of different ways to find success, and there's lots of different meanings of success, you know? So, do your thing, whoever you are out there, do your thing, and do it well. You know, that's the key thing, right? Do it well, serve your customers well, whatever way you do it. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. We have another segment called Secret Sauce.
Listen up. It's the Secret Sauce.
And that is, what's something that you feel like you're doing that other owners can implement into their business to help them level up, help them get up there to the next level with their business?
It's definitely just make sure you're doing all the digital marketing basics. And digital marketing basics are essentially having a website that is, you know, performing well, that loads quickly, that is really clear and talks about the service you provide and gives all the customer information that the customer would want. And also making sure that your business or Google My Business profile, Google Business profile, whatever they're calling it these days, is complete and up to date so that people can find you.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to promote myself or anything, but we did just launch a free course on how to build your own website. So obviously you can hire somebody to build that website for you if that's not your thing. But I also did a full course on, it's just a one video, one lesson course on how to build your own website on a WordPress site from scratch. And it even comes with a template that you can start with. That makes it real easy to get going. And I walk you through everything from how to get it, how to buy the domain, how to register it, all that stuff, setting everything up. So if you're, that's something you're interested in doing, and there's other videos out there you can find too. So, but just wanted to point that out, that there's a template you can download and just a one lesson course on how to build your own website if you want to. Awesome secret sauce. Get that from the digital marketer. Get your digital marketing in line. Cracking the whip. I like it. We got another segment called Pro Tips.
Pro Tips.
And Pro Tips is for the newbies out there who maybe yourself just over a year ago, you know, in that little like 3 week period where, you know, you went from like, hey, I should buy a laundromat to I just bought a laundromat. but anybody who's in that gap, whether it's 3 weeks or 30 years, whatever it is, you got any tips for the newbies, something you feel like they should know beforehand or do beforehand before they buy their first laundromat?
Yeah, like just make sure that you have a really strong network and obviously don't sign anything before you speak to you or have a lawyer. That's probably the first thing. Don't sign a contract of sale until a lawyer's looked at it and given you advice. But outside of that, like the legal team came from a friend, like it was a recommendation from a friend. So talking to your network about the fact that you're really keen on buying a laundromat and bringing in people with skills that you don't have. So, you know, if you're an accountant that wants to buy a laundromat that doesn't know anything about digital marketing, talk to someone who does know stuff about digital marketing. If you're a person who knows about marketing but has no idea about how finances work and can't really analyze a deal, talk to someone who's really good at finance and analyze the deal to make sure it's worth it. And then just have your team set up before you actually go in to make the purchase.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I like that little piece of advice straight from your own personal experience. Get the lawyer involved early. Don't wait. Not all sellers are going to be, you know, quite so accommodating all the time, but great piece of advice. And, you know, I love the networking advice. I mean, that is something that, you know, for me, it's one of my big things that I've been learning since doing Laundromat Resource stuff is just the power of the network and knowing different people and even knowing people who know different people, you know, those so-called super connectors who, you know, whenever you're like, man, I wish I knew somebody who knew digital marketing and, you know, I can say, hey, you got to talk to John. He knows his stuff. That's what he does for a living, right? Or I need a lawyer in Melbourne. Hey, talk to John O because, you know, he needed a lawyer too and didn't get one in time, but now he knows a good one, right? Or whatever, right? So even knowing people who know people is a good one. The last segment I have for you, or the last question, well, second to last question I have for you is, I mean, we're Laundromat Resource here. So do you have any resources that you recommend to people to help them grow their business or their themselves personally?
Yeah. I mean, all of the resources that people name who come onto this show, so books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant, are really great to help you get into a good investment mindset, or at least understand the type of investing that you want to do. There's another book I really like called The Resilience Project, which was written by a guy who lives in Melbourne, Hugh Van Kolenberg. And that's a really good book that talks about gratitude, which again, just like having, you know, been in business, things can get really stressful. So being good at gratitude and being able to put things into perspective is really important. And then also there's a podcast called Dylan Friends, where it's an ex-athlete, Australian athlete, who interviews really high-achieving people, or really high-functioning people. And two of those episodes, one is an interview with a guy named Ben Crowe, who worked for Nike and helped brand athletes. So, you know, think like LeBron James and Tiger Woods and their brands that they've built. And he works with athletes now to separate their persona from them as a person. So that podcast is super interesting. And you know, as business owners, separating the Jono the laundromat owner from Jono the person, and still being able to go and hang out with my friends and family and not being a laundromat owner when I'm there and being present with them is super important to me. And then the second one from Dylan Friend podcast is an interview with a girl named Emma Murray. And she's an elite wellness coach. So she works with like Formula One drivers and other elite athletes on wellness and perspective. You know, for people who have to make, you know, really split second decisions that have really high impacts in terms of elite sport, and being able to help people sort of bring that back and take a lot of that pressure away. It's a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'll link to the podcast Dill and Friends, D-Y-L and Friends. Yep. I'll link to that. I was looking it up while you while you were talking about it. It looks really cool. So I'll link to that podcast. I'll link to, you know, the books that he mentioned, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant, Resilience Project. Resilience Project, is that written in English or Australian?
It's narrated in Australian. Okay. I didn't read it.
Okay.
It's not audible. So the guy who wrote it, it's his story and he tells it. So okay. It's great. It's awesome.
Okay. So if you get the audiobook, just make sure you're fluent in Australian so that you can understand it there, or get the translated copy. No, I'm just kidding. Awesome. Awesome resources recommended. I've not read The Resilience Project, so I'll have to pick that up and get it. And I have not listened to Dylan Friends, so I'm going to go check that out, in particular those two episodes. And again, I'll link to that in the show notes, or if you're on YouTube, it'll be down below in the description. So make sure you check that out. Last question I have for you before I tell you how great you are, which you are great, which I'm going to tell you about in a second. But last question I have for you is, hey, if people are listening to you right now and they're as impressed by you as I am and what you've done in this business, or they just want to connect with you or ask you a little bit more about owning a laundromat, or owning a laundromat in Australia or whatever, they just want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yeah, I'm happy for people to reach out on LinkedIn or connect with people on LinkedIn if they want to see what's going on. They can follow Nina's Laundrette on LinkedIn or connect with me, just my name, and they'll find me on LinkedIn.
Cool. And I'll have a link to that too, so you can go connect with them on LinkedIn. And man, you know what? You're awesome. No, seriously, like super good. This was so cool to hear your story about. I'm still dying of laughter that you just, after like 3 hours, you're like, yeah, I'll buy a laundromat. And then 3 weeks later, you're like, yeah, let's do it. We're in, you know, and have gone and, you know, within a year have tripled that business. That's seriously, in all genuineness, like, I know I've been joking about you being upside down and, you know, having a weird accent and saying weird words and stuff. But seriously, super impressive stuff. And I really, you know, appreciate not just coming on to share your story, which was awesome, but also coming in to share the wisdom you've picked up along the way and how you did what you did and given some really, I mean, I took almost three pages, full pages of notes, which I don't do that often, just from things that you've been saying. A three pager is a pretty big deal. So thanks for sharing so much wisdom, so much good stuff, and being so generous with your time and your information, your experience, your wisdom, your beard, which is fabulous. Thanks, man. Appreciate it a lot.
You too, Jordan. And like, from me and the laundromat community, to you, thanks for, setting this awesome resource up. You know, a lot of what I've learned and implemented in the store came from listening to the podcast, and hopefully, you know, more people can benefit from it in the future.
Yeah.
That's on 100 shows.
Yeah. Well, talk about those like compounding things where you throw, you know, you put stuff out there and it just pays dividends. Like, this interview is going to be one of those compounding things in this industry that helps people kind of going forward. So thank you for the kind words about the podcast and what we're doing over here. And, you know, thank you for helping us compound the success of anybody trying to get into this industry or anybody trying to find their own success in this industry. Appreciate you a lot, man.
Been a pleasure, mate. Thanks so much.
All right. We'll do some more stuff again soon. We'll have to get you back on before you're 40 to see if you're on track to hit your goal there. We got some accountability to be had on this podcast here.
Can't wait.
Okay. I hope you love that episode with Jono, because man, so much good stuff. But as always, I encourage you to take one thing and put it into action this week. For me personally, just the one concept that he talked about that really resonates with me. I've seen it in my life and I have to keep reminding myself of it, but it's just concept of incremental gains, right? Doing the small things right and getting incremental gains. And then when you look back and you're able to do that consistently and you look back, you see just how far you've come just by stacking those incremental gains on top of each other. So whether that's in your laundromat business, whether that's in your personal life habits, whatever, you know, for me, I just signed up for an Ironman, not just for an Ironman, but an Ironman in Nice, France. And, I am like looking at the Ironman and I'm like, holy cow, that's crazy. But I have to rely on this concept of incremental gains, do the work leading up to it, and cross my fingers and hope I can cross that finish line. All right. So whatever it is for you, put something into action this week. Maybe go share it on the forums, laundromatresource.com/forums. And I'll see you next week on the next episode of the Laundromat Resource Podcast. Peace.